But I can't stand it that Hamas is going to tell me when to learn Torah. But Ashkelon said we're not allowed to gather. We weren't green till last week, so as soon as we got green, I said, okay. I would have learned in the middle of the sirens, but that's me. Anyway, we'll see. What I'd like to do tonight is, as I said, these are thoughts that have been, and sources that have been ruminating in my mind for the last 3 months. And we've all been struggling to process the last 3 months, because even if, like you, many of you, I remember very well the 67, I remember very well 73, we remember Lebanon. This is very different for three reasons. And, okay? One reason is that, first of all, we're in Ashkelon, right? Every other war, right, was there. This war is here. That's number one. Number two, all the other wars were very short. Before you breathed and said Gesundheit, it was over. Even in Lebanon in 2006, where it was longer, it was not, it wasn't like this.
Not the Yom Kippur War, it was a little longer.
Yom Kippur was 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks. 3 weeks, it seemed longer, but that's what it was. It was 3 weeks, that's it, right? It wasn't even a month. And yet, so this is, it's like part of daily life. And the third thing is the loss of so much life. We lost 2,700 people in the Yom Kippur War, but not in one day. And it wasn't soldiers who signed up for this. It wasn't people going to a party, or living Simchas Torah in the house. So it's very different, this war. I don't have to talk to you about this because you're talking about it ad nauseum. What I want to add to the discussion is, from a Jewish perspective, what are we supposed to do? How are we supposed to react? And we're going to see some very interestingly, we check almost all the boxes in terms of how we're supposed to react as Jews. But I want to go show you sources that you will not get anyplace else. Because I've been listening, when I say anyplace else, not because I have, because I've been listening to Shiurim and doing research, etc., etc. What do I mean? When it comes to how do you behave as a soldier, there are many, many sources on the books how you behave as a soldier. First of all, even though for 2,000 years we didn't have an army, there was a lot of discussion on how you behave during a war when you're going out to war. Didn't say you're a soldier. Secondly, they put together many books that Tzahal, by the way, Rav Rimon, who we've been dealing with, wrote the book on for Tzahal, on how a religious soldier is supposed to behave during war, with all the details. So we know. But nobody wrote a book how civilians are supposed to behave during war, right? Now, we are fortunate slash unfortunate that we're on the front lines and we can do mitzvot that other people cannot. And people have been doing mitzvot, and we're going to get to that a little bit later. But before that, I like to just, as I said, ruminate with the sources, but one caveat. If you want more Amzel, less words, let me know. And if you want more words, less Amzel. When I say words, I mean the sources. Because Hebrew is not a familiar to many people. Yes?
I was just going to say, if I'm not going to understand.
You'll understand it when I even go through it.
Right.
That, of course. The question is how deeply you go through it. So, for example, I underlined certain things so that we would see them. Okay? Okay. And there are going to be many different ideas because these have, as I said, these ideas have come through many, as I said, many days of thinking and researching, etc. It's not one theme together. But the first thing I want to talk about is something we don't really appreciate. In previous wars, I remember every time there was something wow. We get on in the news. I don't know if it's because we have many more cameras now that everybody has a camera. But I remember in 2014, there was a missile going to the Arieli Towers and somehow it just missed. And everybody talked about, et cetera, in terms of miraculousness. Is that a word? Or how miraculous things that are going on. And, in this war, there's been much more tragedy than miracles. by our standard definition. But when I read this first source of Rabbeinu Mechaya, he says, and again, I'll summarize if you want. He says, interesting, he says, of course, there are two types of miracles that we all know, supernatural miracles and natural miracles. And then he goes on to say, let's do this. In the second line, he says, on all the wars that happened with Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, right? In every one of them, there were many, many miracles, but they're always natural miracles. And then after the three dots, he says, Ki im nes gamur, v'hu ha-nistar ve'inei ha-briyot, she'inam ro'im b'zeh, ela min ha-goshel olam b'tivo. He says, but the wars, the miracles in war, are not supernatural, they're natural. Then he goes on to say, and there are miracles going on all the time, specifically in war, that we're not aware of, even the soldiers are not aware of. So there's a story about, which is particularly important for me, because my father used to say Tehillim all the time, and he would talk about Tehillim power protecting us, how the soldier who had Tehillim in his pocket and the bullet came, and it happened in this war and saved his life. I'm not talking about those kind of miracles. miracle I mentioned earlier today, I had to speak in Hebrew between Mincha and Ma'ariv. So I said, if we talk about miracles, think about the following scenario. After October 7th, from October 8th on, we saw in the news, we saw every place, the families of the kidnapped victims went every place they could. They went to the UN, they went to the government, they went to the Red Cross, correct? I don't need some water, it's okay, Steve, thank you. I know how to say.
I told you.
I know.
She's very interested.
Okay. So we know they went every place, correct? Now, what else can they do, right? It's as if we went to the government. I demand that you demand from Hamas that they're, okay. There was one family, at least one family I know of, because it was publicized beforehand, that said, look, the source of everything, they live in Kiryat Gat, the source of everything is upstairs. Let's protest, let's go to the person that really can help us. So they made a big ceremony, they asked their rabbi, and they asked their rabbi to come to the house with the Torah, and they videotaped it, and the Torah, they brought it into their daughter's room, and they said, my daughter was taken, Sal, was taken, on Simchas Torah, Kadosh Baruch Hu, we believe in you, we trust in you, we're not angry at you, right? But just like we invited you into our room, we want to invite our daughter again into our room. And they made this whole thing about how we love Kadosh Baruch Hu. Okay? And that, I saw it on the news, I don't know if you saw it on the news, okay? Since October 7th till today, there's only one soldier, one person, who escaped. And they don't know the details because they haven't told us, who Tzahal helped escape, who was a kidnapped soldier, person. Who was it? Her name is Ori Mogadisha.
Yeah.
Okay? That were the parents.
Oh. Yeah.
Now, the fact that there's only one person, and the fact that they were the only people I know of who did that, does that make it miraculous? Okay? But the fact is that I knew about the story before that she was saved.
What's the name?
Ori Mogadishu. Obviously Mogadisha, something like that is the name. It's a Sephardi family. And they made this public thing to them. And then a week and a half later, the daughter was the only one.
Like people reacted to the name.
Yeah, the only one that has been saved. I expected, we all expected, by this time we would have found some of the hostages holed up and, okay, Kadosh Baruch Hu has its own ways. But there are miracles going on every day. And the fact that the non-religious, I don't know if you know this, and this is part of the, if I choke up, please, it's because it's very obviously emotional. Never happened before in the history of our people. There have always been people who were less religious, more religious, okay? Anybody have an idea how much tefillin costs? Pair of tefillin.
$1,500.
The cheap, what?
$1,500.
No, not that much. $1,500. The cheap tefillin is like $400. The Mohammedan tefillin is like $700, okay? And they found, at the beginning of the war, a group of people, I guess it's buying both, but so you see. A Ukrainian war, a couple of these soldiers who were not religious at all asked for tefillin. So they got them, then a couple more asked, and they found, that they, and they made a campaign. Anybody who wants a pair of tefillin, Mahadran tefillin, but, and I can tell stories now for an hour, not before first kid, but for who wants tefillin, and will sign that they will wear tefillin every single day, even after the war is over, we will give you tefillin. Of the soldiers in Tzal, now remember, half of them were religious to begin with, right? How many of you think signed up since the beginning of the war?
Many.
Over 5,000 soldiers.
Amazing.
Who have never walked tefillin in their lives. Okay? And that is incredible, right? Where did that come from? Okay? The fact that 1,500 Haredim signed up without saying, you know what the main reason that the Haredim don't let their children go to Tzal? They're afraid that their other children won't get shidduchim, right? And nobody's saying, don't go. That's the opposite side. So if we're living in an incredible time, as I say, in terms of miracles. That's miraculous. If you say 5,000 people who are not wearing tefillin at all, going to wear tefillin, whatever. Yes, quickly, because we have to get started.
300,000 of these soldiers of Lo Dati are crying for tzitzis.
Correct. Now, tzitzis, I don't know if you know this, because they go through, when they're white, they go through the army. So they have to make special tzitzis for the army that is olive green. It costs $6.50, whoever's charging a fortune, whatever. There's been a tremendous need for tzitzis. Some of them are dati'im, when they left on Shabbos, they had their, whatever. But you're right, tzitzis as well. But tzitzis doesn't, the investment is not as great. You didn't have to sign that you're gonna wear tzitzis the rest of your life.
But they're crying.
I understand that, so that's what I'm saying. That's miraculous, okay? I'm gonna skip two because we'll never get to the end. But we're gonna start with three and then we'll go to four to five, and I said we'll do more outside than inside. Three is a very famous Ramban commentary. You know what famous means. I know you don't. But it's a famous Ramban commentary that says, I'll just read it because it's important. Everything that happened to the Avot, everything that happened in the Torah, when it says Avot, it doesn't mean only mean Avraham, it means Yaakov, it means everybody in the Torah. Why is it written down? So we learn it's going to happen to us again in every generation. That's why the Torah goes into such great detail about what happened in each place. It seems ridiculous to write all the details. He settled there, he went to this place, he lived in that place. But it's no purpose. Because the Torah is writing it down because Hashem knew that everything would be happening again. Because that's how the Nevi'im knew, and that's what's going to happen to us. So everything that happened then will happen to us again. So the first war that happened between Jew and non-Jew, let's say, is symbolized by the war between Yaakov and Esau. I know they were brothers, but this is how the Chazal looked at the war, because Esau wanted to kill Yaakov. And it says that Yaakov prepared, now this is more like the soldiers, but we'll get to the non-soldiers in a second, as with three things, Rashi says. What did he do? Three things on the line, so you won't have to read it inside. It says, Daron, Tfilah, Umilchama. Right? How did he prepare to survive his brother's onslaught? He knew why Esau wanted to kill him. So the first thing is, you pacify them with gifts, okay? You daven, right? Pray to Hashem. That's part of our arsenal, which we're going to come back to in a couple of minutes. And the third thing is actually prepare for war. The order is important, okay? Now, again, I'm not going into details, and I'm not one of these guys that say, I can show in every pasuk in the Torah, in Navi, that's happening today, etc., etc. But this has been the way that Jews have prepared for, you're going to call it not necessarily war, but in Chutz Laretz as well. So Daron, you try to buy them off. Okay? We try to buy Hamas off. We come into work in our cities. We give them free water, we give them free electricity. Didn't work, but we tried, okay? Tefillah, we didn't have a chance to have tefillah in this war because obviously it was unexpected. But generally before every war, I don't know if you guys, when I say war, any kind of conflict, do you remember? I remember in fact yesterday because one of my friends of my son, 1996 when Nachshon was taken hostage.
Yeah.
Right? And he had till Sunday to give them an answer. I think it was for Shabbos or whatever. And Friday night they went in and they, unfortunately he got killed, etc. Do you remember that Friday night how everybody lit an extra candle and the whole country was dominating? The Kotel had 250,000 people. It was unbelievable. So we know how to prepare for war or the enemy by tefillah, which we'll come back to soon. And milchama, I have to say that but Rabbi Asher Weiss, you know who Asher Weiss is? There are very few people in the world, probably in the history of the world, who are great gedolim, right? Who are not in their late 90s. You know, we always have the gedolim in the late 90s and we hear about them for 4 years and they pass away, so, right? Who is sensitive to our community, but he's considered a gadol in the Haredi community also. He is the gadol, if you will. Okay, lives in Ramot. His name is Rav Asher Weiss. He speaks a perfect English and a perfect Hebrew. And he is 70 years old, and he's a brilliant guy. And we'll see if he's in a second. But he said something that's just interesting. He said, what happened on October 7th was miraculous. Okay? Miracles don't only mean good for the Jews. Think about it. If you were to say that on Yom Kippur, their, you know, there was anniversary, we would not be prepared for war any year. You'd say, crazy, that's the one day you have to, we know that you have to be prepared for war. The fact that we were so unprepared and so, with so many stupid mistakes, Tzal is not known for stupid mistakes. The fact, this is what Rabbi Weiss says, the fact that they so easily came in and they did what they did and triggered what they did, he says, it's miraculous, not miraculous good for the Jews, but miraculous that it caused world history to change, right? Because supposing they had tried what they tried and we put them down. So there would have been a long, long protracted debate, what do we do with Hamas? We certainly couldn't go in and destroy them. Even if 3,000 came up against the wall and they had, you know, I said, I remember saying the day afterwards, I said, if Hamas really wanted to win the world, and win over everything, and win the country, they should have come in with, what, how many thousands of him? 3,000, 2,000, I don't remember. And they should have gone to every kibbutz and then filmed themselves outside the kibbutz with their guns and saying, we could have gone into this kibbutz and killed people, but we're not, we're gonna go home. And if they did that, the whole world would have said, you're our heroes, right? And they would have got whatever they wanted. And that's not what they wanted. What they wanted was to kill Jews, but okay. The point is, it's miraculous. How it's going to play out and how it's going to change Jewish history. I always say that if Saudi Arabia, a year from now, still makes peace with Israel, it has to be before November or 5th or whatever, next year before Biden goes out, or whatever, then we would have changed history, this war would have changed history in so many ways. Okay, but we can go on. And that's if you're going to fight a war. What if you're not fighting a war? Us. How do civilians deal with war? So Rav Asher Weiss, in source number 5, Minchas Asher, who wrote this 20 years ago, he didn't write this now, okay? He says that there are three ways that civilians should prepare for war. I'm not gonna go through it because you asked me not to, I'm just gonna tell you what he said. You're welcome to go through, but it's a little lengthy, okay? He says, the first thing, what does he say, okay? The first thing he does, he says, is to add learning of Torah. Part of our arsenal is learning of Torah. Learn more Torah than you did before. Just like tefillah, we'll see in a moment. But learning of Torah is part of our arsenal. And therefore, everybody should be learning more Torah than they did before. In every yeshiva, I mean, I didn't go to every yeshiva, but in every yeshiva, whether it's a hesder, whatever, they're learning an extra seder, an extra time. Since October 7th, actually since October 10th, whenever they came back to yeshiva, in order to help, okay? Now, you say, you know, okay, very nice. A Haredi rabbi says you should learn Torah. It's not a big chidush. But if I can show you that in the Torah it talks about that, then it'll be pretty amazing, right? So take a look. I'm going to skip around a little bit. Where do we know that learning Torah protects the Jewish people? And I'm not going to get into the issue of, oh, they're learning Torah in the Haredi yeshivas and they don't go to the army. I'm not even going to get into that issue. Wherever you're at, learn more Torah. So look at source number 7. First, and then we'll see you more in 8. My dichtiv, omdot hayu ragleinu b'sharayach Yerushalayim. The pasuk that our feet were there protecting Jerusalem. Mi garam l'ragleinu sheyamdu b'milchama. Who causes Jews to be successful in war? This is the Gemara. Sharei Yerushalayim. Sheyu oskim b'torah. Because of those people who are learning Torah. Goes on further. Im tafum alai milchama b'zot ani boteach. Okay, that is a pasuk in Tehillim. Where is it from? It's from the David, if I'm not mistaken. Am I mistaken? The David Hashem Ori Yishi? Yeah, 27. Yeah, okay, the David Hashem Ori. Right? It says, if you come upon me in war, I am confident of the outcome. The Ein Zot Ela Torah. Why are you confident? Because he says, because if you learn Torah. Now I'm going to go one step further. Last week's parsha, we read about the 12 brothers who were blessed, right? And we know this famous, if you want to call it, agreement between two tribes, the tribe of Yisachar and the tribe of Zvulun. The tribe of Zvulun had the, if you want to call it, the genes to be great in business, right? I was assistant principal in Sephardic High School with the Syrians, right? I said Zvulun is definitely the Syrians. Very, very good at business, and they couldn't sit down for 10 minutes and learn Torah. They had no good solution to learn Torah, and I had to be in principal of the school, so you can imagine. Anyway, but certain Jews are great at business. Not all Jews, certain Jews, but they knew they couldn't learn Torah, and Yisachar had a tia to learn Torah, whatever that means, and they made a decision that the tribe of Zvulun would go out and make money, enough money to be able to support Yisachar, and Yisachar would learn Torah, and it says that the schar would go to Zvulun, okay? What does that mean? Can you sell your schar, etc.? But this is already in the Torah, okay? And it says, Zvulun, in the pasuk, it says, Zvulun amar, smach Zvulun b'teitecha v'yisachar b'olecha. This is in Dvarim, they said Zvulun comes first because they were able to Torah learn. So that's the famous, source number 8 is the famous source of Zvulun making this agreement. That's very nice when they're in business. What about during wartime? So, if you look, you can look at the Targum Ulfilus on the bottom. Aleha machaneh sha'al ha'sadeh milchama asot b'torah u'tfila. That is very nice. Or maybe, is that? Yeah, I think that's it. No, I'm not sure if that's quoting the right source. Yeah. He says, when Zvulun is in the Ohel of Torah, and he says, but that's very nice. Yeah, Yisachar is in Zvulun from Torah, Zvulun is in the field of war. What does that mean? The agreement wasn't only an agreement about peacetime and business, it was also about wartime. During wartime, Yisachar continued to learn, and that gave ammunition, spiritual ammunition to Zvulun. Look two lines earlier. Hamek Davar was the Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, Bar Ilan, you know, university, right? Very Zionistic. He says, La'olam Zotal Yisrael B'Shashi Yotzim L'Milchama. When people go out, Jews go out to war. Now remember, he lived in the 1800s, early 1900s. Nothing, there was no Jewish army. Miyuchadim Anashim LaTorah. Certain people have to stay back and learn Torah and daven. They go out to the edge of the field. We'll come back to that in a second. Just like we saw in Milchemet Midyan. Okay? Okay, their said was their job is to learn Torah, their job is Now, what is he talking about Midian? So if you look, I don't know why I didn't put it in here. Oh, because Rav Asher Weiss quoted it. If you look at the war of Midian, it says, Elef Lemateh, Elef Lemateh. Very strange thing, 1,000 for each tribe, 1,000 for each tribe. Why does that say it twice? So the rabbis learned the Medrash and says, he quotes it, Rav Weiss, he says, there were really 1,000 and 1,000 each tribe. Each tribe had 2,000. 1,000 to fight, and 1,000 with tefillah. Right? And that's how Jews always fought. How Jews always fought through tefillah. So first of all, we take Torah. The second thing we're going to actually come through is tefillah. How do we know that tefillah helps in war? Okay, what was the very first war that the Jewish people fought?
Amalek.
Correct. Okay. Source number 8. I am not going to read the whole source, but I'll read the last two lines from the Gemara. It says, "We were losing on Amalek. We were losing that battle. Why were we losing a battle? Different story. But we were losing the battle. When do we become victorious? It says in the pasuk, when we looked up. When we looked up, that's when we became victorious. So the Gemara, the last two lines of source number 8 says, "Vayakasher yorim Moshe yado b'davar Yisrael." When Moshe would raise his hands, and it says, and the Jewish people then became succeeded. The chiyadav shel Moshe otot milchama, and the hands of Moshe make war. In other words, what did the hands of Moshe have to do with the success on the battlefield? Osho wrote milchama, where they destroy war. Elo lomar lecha kol zman shehayu Yisrael mistaklin klapei mala. Whenever the Jewish people looked up and prayed to God, and Moshe saw that they were praying to God, umishavdim et liban la'aviyem shebashamayim, hayu mitgabrim. That's when they became successful. It wasn't Moshe was able to lift his hands because he decided to. V'lav hayu noflim. Okay? Because they relied on Hashem, they realized that everything is in Hashem's hands, so they were successful. In every shul, including this shul, in every shul that I know of, we fulfill this in a small part. At the end of davening, what does every shul do these days? They say at least one parak of Tehillim. And it's not only shuls, by the way. Where I used to live, every night at 8:45, before 9 o'clock Maariv, men, women gather for 10 minutes of Tehillim outside, 100 men, 100 women, and they say Tehillim for 10 minutes. Okay? And this is something that's a Jewish reaction, as we know, in time of distress, in time of war, one of the Jewish weapons, okay, not the only Jewish weapon, obviously, one of our weapons is not only Tehillim, but davening to Hashem. Okay? Now, I'm not here to interpret, I'm not here to say if we how much our tefillah helps and how much it doesn't help, but we know that according to the sources, we're supposed to be davening, and everybody I know is davening in their own way, etc. So we can check off that box. Okay, maybe Torah, you're not learning as much because you're too busy volunteering, maybe. But certainly, in terms of davening, that's also very natural, obviously. Yes?
Why didn't Moshe tell Reuben and Gad, instead of crossing over, to sit and learn instead?
Excellent. Because what do they want to do? Good question. They didn't say we want to sit here and do it. What do they want to do?
They wanted
to work. They wanted to be shepherds. Shepherds is something you have to be with the sheep all the time, right? I'm not an expert on shepherding, but they don't sit there. You know, they walk. So they wanted to be shepherds, and they said you don't have enough land for our shepherds. So they wanted to do things. It wasn't that, the Haredi community, their whole reason. That they quote, even Ben Gurion said, what do they say? It says, Talmudam, the Talmud is their livelihood. That's the thing, Lachlan Talmudam. But it's because they said nobody's learning Torah in Israel during 48. Right? There were a few hundred boys. And by the way, in 1948, all the rabbis said, when you have war, he told every single Haredi to go out and fight. They didn't sit and learn in 48, you know? Every single, you look at anybody who was a Haredi, 48, who became Rosh Yeshiva, they all fought in Tzal. right? Because, okay. Anyway, so we know that davening is important, okay? Okay, that's the second piece. The third piece is, I would call it our secret weapon. Somebody mentioned, I remember, Golda said, right? Our secret weapon is, we have no place else to go. I found a better secret weapon, because we have place to go, right? You want to go to Germany, they'll take you, okay? There are places that'll take you, whatever. We have places to go today, but not always, okay? And that's why we have, Baruch Hashem, so many Jews here. Anyway, but we have, there's another secret weapon. When I say secret weapon, I mean it in the real sense, because, first of all, I never heard of the source. That doesn't mean it didn't exist, but I haven't heard people teach it, and if they knew the source, they would teach it more, because how can we guarantee that we're going to win the war? Okay? Guarantee, according to the Gemara at least, comes along David HaMelech, okay? King David, who had an army, who was successful at war, but not every war. Some battles they lost, some battles they won. Plishtim, you know Navin probably better than I do. I don't know Navin well. Never taught well. He comes along and he says, Achav, I don't know, so there's been Nevuah, etc., was another general who was a terrible, terrible hater of God, Oved Avodah Zarah. And he also had an army. And every battle he fought, he was successful. So the Gemara says in Yerushalmi, source number 9, Amar David Ibn Kadosh Baruch Hu, David said before God, Ribon Olamim, Master of the Universe, Mashkinatcha Leirei Ba'aretz, why do sometimes we feel your presence when we fight a battle? Shkinatcha Mibeinayim Ha'echidami, but sometimes we feel it's not around. Roma al Shamayim Elokim al Kof Vodecha. Sometimes it is, sometimes not. Avol Dorosh al Achav, but in the generation of Achav, when he fought battles, Ovei Avodah Zarayim, right? And he doesn't say this, he was an idol worshiper, and they were totally successful. So what's the reason? Hashem says to David, you want to know why? Shelo hayu lahen Torin, Hayu Yardin and Milchava with Oska. There was no enmity at all between the people. They were totally united. I'm not making this up. October 5th, you would say, tell me a description of the Jewish people. They would say, Civil War. Totally disunited, right? In America, the organizations didn't get along with each other. Nobody had Israel as the center focus. In Israel, we know what was going on here. The hatred. When I say, it's one thing to disagree. I don't say disagree, but don't be disagreeable. Right? It's one thing to disagree on a philosophy, a justice system, whatever. Different thing to tear down a shul on Yom Kippur. Right? Which they did.
Sinat Chinam.
And we, well?
Sinat Chinam.
Okay, I'm not even sure what Sinat Chinam means anymore, because Chinam, not Chinam, because I hate you because you did this and this and this. Not Chinam, right? But it's because there is a disagreement between us, and I've talked about this in the past. It's not the point. The point is it got to the boiling point, right? And everybody said it's going to boil over. October 8th, we're the most united people on earth. How did it happen? How did it happen? How did it happen that 1,500 Haredim said, I'm signing up for the army. I don't care what my parents say. It's not comprehensible, right? How did it happen that they called up, 300,000 and 400,000 people appeared, including a 70-year-old guy, okay? How did it happen? Remember, it was just 6 months ago. We're going to show the Milu Nikim. We're not going to show up ever again as the Milu Nikim. The fighters, the pilots, whatever, that was their big weapon. And October 8th, they were eating crow. They all showed up, but that's not the point. And I can tell you from my son and a few stories, in the places where they don't have, you know, only religious, only not religious, that's not an issue anymore. How did that happen? Source number 9. Right? But we were Mishpacha October 5th. Okay? And then and we have Mishpacha, by the way, there's always a crazy uncle who's nuts, who has crazy ideas.
That crazy uncle gets hurt, something happens
right.
to him.
We're still family.
Everybody.
We're still family.
We're still family.
Okay? Okay? It's amazing, you know, I spent many years in the former Soviet Union, and every time I played my guitar, I played Am Yisrael Chai. I remember how Shlomo Kalbach wrote that song in 1964 for the former people in the Soviet Union. And I see the song that everybody's singing now, and I said, everybody thinks Kalbach's greatest contribution to the Jewish people was his music. You know what his greatest contribution was? Three words. Am Yisrael Chai. There's no source. That's Kalbach. Yeah. Od Avinu Chai comes from Parsha 2 weeks ago. Is my father still alive? Od Yosef Chai. That's Am Yisrael Chai is all Kalbach. Okay? Yeah. And amazing because that's what everybody's saying. And that's what everybody's feeling. Okay, we have a second slide. Turn the page over. Oh, I'm actually going to go back to page. If you take everything I said in the last, that's my contribution. Everything I said in the last 10, 15 minutes, I put in source number 6. Okay? We see we have three, we say it every day, we said it tonight, say it tomorrow, and Shon Esrei. We say Shema 2 minutes earlier. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. There's only one God. What do we say? Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Elokei Avoteinu. Two gods. Elokei Abraham Elokei Yitzchak Elokei Yaakov. So far, 5 gods, right? What does it mean, one God? So obviously, it doesn't mean there's 5 gods. They're all parts and representative of different parts of Hashem. If you see everything I just said is represented by, we don't have to go through the sources on this, Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. The essence of our Judaism is based on what these three represented, these three avot. Abraham represented what I call it the chesed, the unity aspect of the Jewish people. And when I say secret weapon, it was so secret that for 2,000 years had the Jews known about this, they would have, you know, put everything else aside, but Mashiach would have come already. Number 2, Abraham Yitzchak is the one who invented the idea of tefillah. He was the korban avoda on the Mizbeach. And Yaakov was the one, Ishtam Yoshev Ohalim. I have the sources are all written here. And he was the one that represented Torah. If we could do, we have been doing Torah, Avoda, Gemilu Chasadim, the three foundations of the world, during this war. Some people do more chesed, some people do more tefillah, some people, but everybody's doing something. And that is our secret, and that's why we're going to succeed. And that's why the greatest miracle of all so far is that the world has not kicked us out. Right? If you would say 5 months ago, we're going to go into, it doesn't make a difference, Lebanon, Iran, whatever, and they're going to let the Jews do what they have to do for 3 months. You say, there's no way the world will let that happen for more than 3 days. Forget about 3 months. And yet, so it's also miraculous, but we don't realize it in the geopolitical sense. So these three foundations of Judaism are also how we're supposed to behave, and we check out all the boxes. Okay? Now, okay, I'm going to go one step further and say, you know, I just read, you know, we all, and this is going to be a, you know, I'm going to close the chapter on what I just said we should be doing and see how we've been acting a little bit in the field. It's interesting. I just read about a pretty famous person who died. Okay? His name was Tom Smothers. Remember? Okay. And I'm reading the obituary. Okay? And his father, okay? His father was in the army. I gotta get it straight. His father was in the army overseas, and 300 people in his base overseas, I think in England, maybe it was in France, whatever, during World War II, were killed by friendly fire, by bombs that went off, killing his father by British people. Okay? Nobody took the British to, you know, to court to say, how dare you do this? Similarly, in Dresden, in Germany, we killed about, I think, 50,000 civilians. Nobody said, how dare you kill civilians? We didn't know, we're going to come back to that in a second, but how do we know civilians, how do we know it's not civilians? In Dresden, but Dresden certainly was the, okay? And the concept of, we should go into war, but you have to be very careful of killing civilians, has never existed in the world, ever, that I know of, except in Judaism, which we talked about last year, when one thing, Corrado was average. But look what it says. Now, the other thing that never existed is, we're going to destroy Gaza and Hamas. We know Hamas does not wear uniforms, so we have no way of knowing who is armed and who is not armed. They look the same, correct? Okay? And we're going to destroy all the people. Just make sure you don't kill any innocent people. How are we supposed to do that? Okay? Is there a Torah basis to this? And what do? We're idiots. Not only do we lost the element of surprise. Why? In 2 days, we're going into this house and that house and that house. Please leave. And if you have some armed people with you, I can't tell the difference, so that's how they got out. Right? No army in the history of the world ever announced where they're going to go into in advance. Think about it. What army did that? Go back to any war. Afghanistan, Russians. Go back to the 1990s I investigated. You don't announce in advance where you're going. But we said, okay, everybody check out, this is where we're going to go and kill. There's a Torah basis for that. What does it say? Look at the Torah. Source number 13. Before you're allowed to fight a war. And now we're talking about an obligatory war against the Canaan. Before you go in and you obliterate people you're supposed to kill, you have to first give them the chance to have peace. This is in the Torah. And if they say, yes, we don't want to fight, we will make peace with you. On what grounds? And they will acknowledge that you will run the country. They will pay taxes. Abducha doesn't mean slaves here. It means they will be servants. They will be your laborers. Okay? If they agree to that, then you're not allowed to fight, not allowed to shoot one bullet. Right? That sort of passed on October 7th. Imlo tashlimi machar vasita imcha milchama v'tzarta alea. Then you got to give it to them hard and heavy. Right? So you have to give people a chance to make peace. And the Rambam in Source 13 says the same thing. Ein osim milchama im adam ba'olam ad shekarim lo shalom. Right? Elchad milchamei reshut ve'elchad milchamei mitzvah. Even in milchamei mitzvah, you have to give a chance for people not to fight. For, I would imagine, since 1987, we'll come back to it, I think I have time, but certainly since 2005, we've given Hamas a chance. Okay? Until they actually said, absolutely not. Okay. The next one I want to point out, only because of an incident that I saw. Okay? Source 15 says, this is an ecological source. What does it say? When you're going to make a siege around a city, now how do they break through the siege of the city? They used to have battering rams. How do they make the battering rams? Out of trees, these big trees, actually there were big trees in Israel at one point, I guess, and they're going to make battering rams. It says when you're going to take battering rams in the middle of a war, it says in source number 15, Lo tashpit aleitza lidoach alav garzen, ki mimenu tochel. You're not allowed to take a fruit tree to make a battering ram. Why? V'otolo tichrot. You can't take a fruit tree to cut it down and make a battering ram. Ki adam eitz asadeh, a man is compared to a tree. Rak eitz asher lo teida, ki lo eitz ma'achalhu. You're only allowed to take a battering ram from a tree that is not
Fruit bearing.
Why? Because you're needlessly destroying the fruit in order to have the battering ram. Right? Obviously, if the only trees around are fruit-bearing trees, you're allowed to do it. Okay? Why am I telling you this? Third, when all this is over, I invite everybody. I am making a collection of any video and any story I see about this war. I am saving it. So I have over 1,000 videos already. I don't know how many. One of the videos I saw is soldiers who were religious, who obviously learned this thing. When they got their tank on the Jewish side, all of a sudden, third day of the war, I see they stopped. This is obviously way before they went into the cities. It says they stopped and they planted a tree.
I saw that.
You saw that tree, okay? I'm not making it up, okay? Okay, why they planted a tree is because when we got our tank, we accidentally overran a tree and destroyed it. So we felt that we had to do that. And I said, and he said, that's all the source. So that's how Jewish we are in that terms of the kind of army we are. Not only do we care about the people, care about the tree. Okay? All right. Now, let's see. I want to just have time for maybe one or two more. Okay. Source 17, I'm not sure. I'll say it to my audience, let me hear if I don't hear that. One of the greatest arguments by the world, with the here every time, is proportionality, right? You know what proportionality? I don't know what it means, proportionality. You say, you know what it is, I don't know what it means. It means we're supposed to go in and kill X number of babies?
No.
We're supposed to go in and kill X, we have to look for all the dancers in Hamas in order to do it exactly the way they did it to us. What does proportionality mean in a war?
And legally, in a war, that the target, the value of the target is worth the collateral damage.
Yeah, no, I understand that, but not talking about collateral damage. Supposing there's no collateral damage. They were saying we were killing so many more. That's what they were saying. But they don't realize that in Ukraine, right, they killed 100,000 Russians and they only suffered 25,000 in Ukraine. So therefore, Ukrainians are guilty. You know, numbers.
The world likes to play in numbers.
No, I
guess not.
So I said, before I quote a source, I guess we don't have time to go through all of it, but I'll tell you in a second. I said, okay, let's do proportionality. When we exchange prisoners, now it's true, it's not exactly proportional because they are killers, they are terrorists, they are criminals, and we are innocent people, but it's the best we can do, so we should do it one for one. That's proportional. Nobody said that. Why does anybody say that? Proportionality. Okay, anyway, there's no concept of proportionality when it comes to hurting the other person. How do we know that? The Gemara says so. But I heard prior to this. The Gemara, it says in the Torah, look what it says in the Torah, source number 17. It says, you know, the most famous, maybe one of the most famous psukim in the Torah that the non-Jews know, an eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, right? Proportionality, right? And look what it says. Shever tachat shever, ayin tachat ayin. Ayin tachat shein, kasher yitein, mum ba'adam, ken yitadein bo. It says it has to be proportionality. When you are going to suffer, somebody just hurts you individually, not an army, but one, you have to give it back exactly. There is not one source in 3,000 years, since 3,500 years since we got the Torah, that says we're supposed to do this. What does the Gemara say? The Gemara, which I'm not going to go through right now, in 17 says, the Mishnah first says, if you hurt somebody else, you have to pay them money. Nobody ever says you have to actually take out somebody's eye. No one ever. Oh, but there is a loan opinion. No big loan opinion. Why not? Ever think about it? It says it in the Torah. Why not? The Gemara, you want to go through it at your own time, explains that proportionality is not possible. Because when you take out somebody else's eye, you're going to do worse or not as bad to them as they did to you. Or the court. How do you cut somebody's arm off exactly the same way and do the same damage? Impossible. Therefore, proportionality, as we know it, doesn't exist in Judaism. And therefore, even though it goes against the words of the Torah, that's not what it meant. Okay, you want to hear something interesting? It says, ayin, tachat ayin, right? Right? So the Vilna Gaon says, if you want to look, what do you do for an ayin? Look tachat ayin. And he says, Look at the alphabet. Alphabet, Gimel, Daled, Hey, Vav, Zayin, Chet, right? Okay? He says, look at the letters under each of the letters. Under the letter Ayin is what letter? What comes after Ayin? Samach, Ayin, Pei. What comes after Yud? Kaf. What comes after Nun? Samach. Put it together, it says Kesef. Right? Ayin, Tachal Ayin. You look at the letter underneath, that's what you know what it means. Okay? Anyway, so yeah, we've got 5 more minutes of your time. I want to share with you.
Yeah, just
yeah.
The absolute epitome of non-proportionality is in the Torah. That's Shechem with Shimon Levi in the incident with Dina.
Listen, they you're opening up.
City.
Did they do the right thing? I could spend an hour on that question. Were they castigated by Yaakov in last week's parsha?
Yes.
Arur! They should be cursed forever. That's what he said. Doesn't mean they did the right thing. On the other hand, the Maharal and the Rambam agree with you. We'll talk about that. Not now, okay? Okay? Okay. I'm going to give both ideas anyway. It may go a little past, okay? What should I do? In order to honor Nechama Leibowitz, I think I'll do 18 instead of what I wanted to do. Okay? 18. Everybody said, in the world, including the Jews, who didn't know, what happened? Hamas became so violent all of a sudden. What happened then? Hamas all of a sudden said, we want to kill every Jew, even though it's in their charter. What do you mean? They just behave like animals. Where did this come from? How come? Right? Yes, no, world's there, you know? And even Hamas had to, they took videos, they were so proud of it, and they had to take them off because the world's turning against, you know, it was all staged. You know, we didn't really do it. Where did that come from? And with this I learned, this again, you know, it's from the Hamas language in a different context, but it's something we have to understand, okay? Source number 18. Okay, for this you have to understand a little bit of Hebrew. Every verb in Hebrew has 3-letter root, correct? You do 3 letters times 22 letters, there aren't enough verbs for everything that we do as Jews. Okay? So they had to make up more verbs. 22 times 3, I don't know what you know the permutations are, how many thousands, but we needed more verbs. So they invented something called binyanim. The same 3 letters can be used in 7 different, I don't know what you call them, tenses. It's not tenses, it's whatever.
Congregations.
What?
Congregations.
Congregations.
Okay.
So there's kav, there's difal, there's kuav, okay. The word can mean the same thing, can mean something close to it, or not at all. Meaning the following. I think I said this, I think, by Pesach, if I'm not mistaken. The word safar in kav means he counted. The word siper, I'm sorry, you counted. Siper means tell the story. The word lehistaper means take a haircut. Not related. But shalach, I'm sorry, but the word, let's say, shavar means, in kal, to break. Shiber means to smash. Okay, there is a relationship between the two. Sometimes there is, sometimes there isn't. In the Torah, and we don't read it carefully, the Chacham taught me how to read the Torah carefully, the word lishloach, okay, is not the same as l'shaleach, okay, or in kav. The word is shlach. One parsha is named shalach, shlach, right, which means send on a mission to come back. There's another parsha that's called bishalach, not the same word. What does shalach mean? Go free. Correct? Okay, shalach and ami doesn't mean go on a mission and come back. Shalach and ami with an aleph with a chatah. Go free, right? Shlach with a kal means go on a mission and come back, right? Shlichu, okay? Rashi asks in Source 18, when Noah let the dove go, right? Did Noah want the dove to settle in the world or not? He would come back. So most people say, well, he sends him on a mission. If he comes back, we know that the water is still too wet for us to settle. So it says in 18, Vayishalach et hayonah meito, Noach said Vayishalach. right? Lirot hakelu, to see if the water went down in the Yapan Yadama. So Rashi says, Ein zeh lashon shlichut. Don't read it by Yishlach, he sent him on a mission. Read it as by Yishalach, he set him free. Ela lashon shalach, shaloach, set him free. Shalcha, shalacha, lechet lidracha. He wanted him to be free. He didn't want him to come back. Okay, everybody understand? It's the difference between Vayishalach and Vayishlach. In Parshat Chukat, the people sin again, big surprise, okay? And after they sin terribly against God, etc., let's go back to Mitzrayim in the 40th year, God decides to punish them by sending them the Nechashim to bite them, to kill them. You know the story? They send the serpents? You know what I'm talking about. Okay. God sends out the serpents to kill them. Okay? That's their punishment. So when you send the serpents, should it be by Yishlach or by Yishalach? Did he send them on a mission to kill, or did he send them free? So Rashi, so look at, this is what the Chumash says. Look at 18, and you'll get the Chumash in a second. By Yishalach Hashem ba'am et ha-nechashim ha-srafim. It says, by Yishalach, he set them free. What do you mean, set them free? He sent them on a mission to bite the Jews. So Nechama says, you don't understand. This is, we don't understand the Nechashim, we don't understand how death works, and we don't understand Hamas, I have. All right? He says, God, the Nechashim are in the desert. Every single day, every single minute, they are longing to do what comes naturally to them to bite anybody who comes along. God protects the Jewish people for 39 plus years, every single minute, every single day. When he sets the Nechashim free, they do what comes naturally. They bite them. And the Chumash said that's how the world works. Every single minute of every single day, God protects each and every one of us from death. When Hashem says, okay, whatever reason, then Malach HaMavet does what he does naturally. Okay? I say the same thing with Hamas. Since 1987, if they could have done what they did on October 7th, they would have done it every single day since 1987. And they tried many times the Tzal doesn't tell us, obviously, right? And they tried. My son had a guard at the border in Gaza. He told us some of the stories, told me some of the stories. And it's not that all of a sudden they woke up and they decided. They've been this way since 1987. And the world finally saw a glimpse of what they are all the time. But they finally broke through and they did what they did, unfortunately. And we have to understand that when you're dealing with people who are not human beings, you don't negotiate, you know, well, let's just sit down and we'll make a nice deal. You know, these are people who just want, this is what they are. And we have to understand, they are like the Hashem waiting every second. And like they said, if we can do it again, we can do it again. I don't want to end on a down note, so I want to say end on a good note. Even though we're going a little after. Okay? Source 19. I'm going to end on a good note. We've all experienced, I know I have, been crying much more since October than I did before October. Right? And it says that after a certain point in history, the only thing that helps to God is tears. Look what it says in Source 19. Ba'afal picha sha'arei tefilah ninalu, even though the gates of prayer are, at certain points, or whatever, are closed, sha'arei dma'ot no ninalu. The gates of tears are never closed. Okay? And, sorry. Right? So the question is asked, if the gates are never closed, what do you need gates for? Right? What do you need gates? It's always open. Right? They don't joke. 7-Eleven in America. Right? It's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. What do you need to have a lock on the door? Right? So, same question. And you know what they answer? Two types of tears. There's a tear of that we all shed, I don't know how he said it. He said, the tears that we feel that when people close to us are hurt, etc., etc. October 7th, everything in the war. He says, that's legitimate tears. He says, but the tears, so it's 19 and others, say, but tears of giving up hope don't go into heaven. The tears of Yehush, I don't know the best word to say it, give up. Those kind of tears are not Jewish. Baruch Hashem, the tears that we have shed since October 7th have been the tears that get into heaven. Chas v'shalom, we should ever give up and say, and that's why I say Am Yisrael Chai, is the word saying that no matter what happens, we'll never give up. And that we have to understand that on that basis, we go on, and we will see a light at the end of the tunnel, and we will see, looking back 10 years, we'll gather again, we'll see why it was good for the Jews, and you don't understand that, okay? And with that, we'll end, but I have surprise, right? Just when you thought you'd go home. I have, if you want to continue the class, I'm not the only person in the world who has citizens. I'm giving you 5 options of continuing the class. So take a look at the options. I'll explain them as I get it around.